It's Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's yesteryear. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levanier. Crime stories coming up in this hour. Later on, we hear the tale, Till Death Do Us Part, on The Whistler. But right now, it's the Radio City Playhouse. At the time of this broadcast, part of NBC's Monday Nights at 10:30, featuring all sorts of stories. In this episode, The Promise, It's Crime, starring Charlotte Holland, Joe DeSantis, and Sylvia Davis, from November 8, 1948.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 14. Our play this evening is titled The Promise. It is both written and directed by Harry W. Junkin. Mr. Junkin.
Thank you, Bob Warren, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is a great pleasure to welcome you to the second series of half-hour dramas under the Radio City Playhouse banner. The aim of the series is to bring you adult radio fare, plays in the best tradition of the theater, plays that are a little bit removed from the usual pattern of boy meets girl or detective catches crook. To be used on Radio City Playhouse, a script must be a good story, expertly told. The author may be world famous or completely unknown. Reputation is incidental. We are concerned with ability to write. Now, the same general thinking influences our choice of performers. We don't demand a Hollywood or a Broadway reputation, but we try to insist on a top quality performance. In other words, we're interested in talent first and fame second, and we believe that you are too. We hope you'll come to regard Radio City Playhouse as one of the really exciting half hours in your radio week. We hope you'll tell us when we're good and wrap our knuckles if you ever think we've let you down. Here, then, is our first offering in the new series, Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 14, The Promise.
Pittsburgh, a winter evening in 1938. Before a fireplace in one of the town's most beautiful rooms, Herbert Prentice is standing. He is in full evening dress and looks like what he is, a very calm, very strong, very big, and very handsome man. He looks up at the clock, checks it with his wristwatch, then stares back into the flames. It is exactly 8 o'clock.
Ella, don't tell me you're actually ready on time.
Oh, yes, Herbert, I'm ready. I couldn't find my black glove, so I'd have been ready sooner. Oh.
What is it?
I promised Mary I'd tuck her in. You get your coat on, and I'll meet you in the car. I won't be a minute.
Come here, Ella.
I won't be a minute.
Come here, Ella.
What is it, Herbert?
Come here, Ella.
Yes, Herbert.
Ella, our daughter is 8 years old. And even if she were in bed, which I doubt, she doesn't require tucking in, as you put it. Now, open your cloak.
Herbert,
open your cloak, Ella. I know that you're not wearing the white dress,
Herbert,
Ella.
Please,
Open your cloak, Ella. Thank you. Now, go upstairs and put on the white dress.
Herbert, please, I don't like it. This one is much nicer.
Do as I say, Ella.
But I hate that dress.
You bought it in Paris.
You made me buy it in Paris. Herbert, please don't spoil tonight. I've been looking forward to it so much. All week I've been looking forward to
Ella,
it.
Ella, you know nothing about clothes. This is a very formal party. You're my wife, Ella, Mrs. Herbert Prentice. Doesn't that mean anything to you?
But I don't like that white dress. It makes me feel so...
So what?
It's indecent.
Poor Ella.
It is, Herbert. It's too low. It's much too low. I don't like it. It makes me feel awful.
Ella, your bosom isn't that interesting. Nobody will look at you with lustful eyes. Now, please, we'll be late. Go upstairs and put on the white dress.
Herbert, if you insist on my wearing that dress, I'll...
Yes?
I'll have to stay home.
Just as you wish, Ella. I told you yesterday that I wanted you to wear that dress. It's very obviously from Paris, and it's very obviously expensive. I wish you'd do as I say. However, if you won't, I'll tell Mrs. Crandall you've developed a sick headache. Good night, Ella. Ella?
Yes?
You can't be a little cooperative. You might at least be polite. I said good night.
Good night, Herbert. Sleep. I could only get to sleep.
Why don't you stand up to him, Ella? Assert yourself. Why are you afraid of him? He would naturally strike you. You don't really care about the party at Mrs. Crandall's. You're afraid. And you're afraid of being afraid. You'd better go to sleep before he gets home from the party.
Sleep. If I could only get to sleep. I'll try to think of nice things. Hello? Why, Mrs. Crandall, I'm sorry I couldn't come to your party. I had a headache and I... What? Accident? Herbert? Well, is it serious, Mrs. Crandall? Hospital? Where? Yes, but what hospital? All right, I'll go over right away. Southport, is he suffering very much?
We've given him a sedative, Mrs. Prentice. There's nothing else we can do tonight.
Doctor, I wish you'd be frank with me. Is he badly injured?
Yes. Yes, I'm afraid he is. But he'll get well.
I wish you'd tell me, Doctor.
It's his back.
Back?
He was leaving the Crandalls and he slipped. When he fell, he struck his spine on the edge of the stone steps behind him.
Oh.
We're very lucky to save him at all. Very lucky.
You don't mean... Dr. Southwell, you don't mean that...
Yes. Yes, I do.
His back is broken?
Yes, Mrs. Prentice, I'm afraid so.
Oh.
I'm afraid you're going to have to take care of him for a long time.
Ella, you idiot, do as you're told!
Why don't you stand up to him, Ella? He's a cripple. Why are you so afraid of him? For 10 years you've been putting up with his abuse, his cursing, his bad temper. For 10 years he hasn't moved out of that bed, yet you're still afraid of him. Why don't you stand up to him?
I will. I will stand up to him. Tomorrow.
Prentice speaking. Yes? Morris, I told you yesterday that... I don't want any excuses. Was it shipped? Now listen, Morris. For 10 years I've been running the Prentice Steel Company better from my bed than you do from your desk. Now either the Draper contract is shipped on time or I'll get a new general manager, understand? What? Listen, either get it out on time or you're fired. And in the future, wait until after 10 o'clock in the morning before you start bothering me with problems you should be able to solve yourself. Ella! Ella, I'm ready to shave now! What the devil is she doing?
I brought you shaving water, Herbert. Did you have a good night?
I had a terrible night.
If only Dr. Southwood could stop your suffering.
I'm not suffering. I'm always conscious of it, and it's irritating, that's all. But I'm not suffering.
Yes, Herbert.
Yes, Herbert. No, Herbert. Can you manage, Herbert? Where's the soap?
On the tray. Why don't you have a barber to come in and shave you, Herbert? It would be so
I hate barbers. None too hot.
I'm sorry.
You're always sorry. Tonight I get tired of hearing you say you're sorry.
I'm sorry, Herbert. Then I'll go someplace where I won't bother you.
Stand up to him, Ella. Why do you take it? Why don't you assert yourself?
I will. I will. I won't take it anymore. I will assert myself. Yes. Tomorrow, I'll walk right in and tell him.
Tomorrow. Always tomorrow. Never tomorrow.
Herbert, I wish you'd let Mary go to the dance tonight.
Sit down, Ella. Sit down on the bed beside me. There, that's it. Now, you were saying?
It's a big college dance, Herbert. Frank Williams has asked her. He's on the football team. She has a new dress and she looked so lovely.
Looked so lovely?
I mean, she would look so lovely if... Oh, Herbert.
What do you mean, looked? So lovely.
Herbert, you're hurting my wrist.
Lots of strength left in my arms, isn't there? Mary! Herbert. Mary!
Herbert, don't call her.
She's gone, hasn't she?
Yes.
You deliberately told her to go, didn't you?
Yes.
After I had expressly said she couldn't.
Yes.
I see.
I can't let you interfere with Mary. I just can't let you, Herbert.
You can't what?
I can't let you interfere with Mary. She's only 18, Herbert. She's not able to take
her... Let me. Now get this straight, my dull little mouse of a wife. Nobody lets me do anything. Let me indeed. Because of your little flight of whimsy tonight, Ella, our very dull and uninteresting daughter can get out and hustle.
Hustle?
Work.
Work?
She can quit that fancy college and go to work.
Oh, no, Herbert, you're not serious. You can't take her out of college. You can't.
Oh, can't I? By the very simple expedient of not writing a check.
Why don't you stand up to him, Ella? Think of Mary, Ella. She's your daughter. Ella, why don't you kill him?
No, I can't. I can't. I just haven't got the nerve.
Nurse Bryce! Nurse Bryce! Come back, Nurse Bryce!
Oh. It's you, Ella. Come in.
Nurse Bryce has left, Herbert.
Oh, well, she'll be back tomorrow. She slapped me. Slapped me hard. Wasn't anything too serious. I just felt affectionate. Slapped me hard. Why don't you get mad at me, Ella? Every time I look at you, I wonder how I ever managed to marry you. You're so unendingly dull. Pour me a drink.
Of what?
A whiskey.
Yes, Herbert. Soda?
Yes. Thank you, my lovely one. Why don't you get drunk sometime, Ella? It might do things for you.
I don't like it.
What do you like, Ella? You don't read, you don't go out. What do you like, Ella?
Herbert, did you get Mr. Crandall to fire Frank Williams?
I didn't get him. I told him to.
But why?
Because he's a fresh kid with no guts and no brains, and he's not going to marry our daughter such as she is while I have strength enough to lift a telephone. And speaking of Morris Crandall, we'll take care of you, too. All I have to do is call him
And you know where you'll land? In a padded cell. It's all planned. All I have to do is lift that phone and call Morris Crandall.
Herbert, don't do it. Leave them alone, Herbert. Please, please, Herbert.
I wonder if you know how revolting I find you. I wonder if you know how I dream of the day you'll go someplace and quietly die. I've got a book here, Ella. Torture. It's history in the Far East. As well as some very clever ways of killing people, there's one torture in particular that appeals to me. They make a cat of nine tails out of fine wire, and they heat the wire white hot and whip off little flecks of flesh. Slowly. Very slowly.
But why? Why do you hate me? Like...
Get out of here, wet face!
You monster.
I could only walk. I could only get a hold of you. I could only get at you.
But I've never done anything. Never anything that you...
No, never anything! I hate you because I hate myself for ever having anything to do with you. You're not a woman, you're a mouse. For 10 years I've been in this bed, a cripple, helpless. For 10 years I've listened to you. Yes, Herbert. No, Herbert. Pardon, Herbert. For 10 years. 10 years! Now get out. Get out before I break this bottle over your dull little head. Don't stand there gawking. Get out! Get out!
Stand it anymore, Ella. He tried to kill you tonight. If that whiskey bottle had struck you, kill him, Ella. You've planned it often enough. You know just how to do it. You read his books, Ella. The books on torture, on murder. You do know how, Ella. Do it. You can do it, Ella.
Yes. Yes, I can.
Tonight, Ella.
No. No, not tonight.
You can't stand it any longer. He's after Mary and Frank now, so kill him. Kill him, Ella.
Yes. Yes, I will. I will. I'll kill him tonight.
You've made him cocoa every night for 10 years. You know just what to do, Ella. Do it. Take the bottle out of your pocket, Ella. That's it. Now unscrew the top. That's it. Now pour it into the cocoa. That's enough. Careful, and you'll taste it if you use too much. Now, stir it. Now, take it into him. Take it into him now.
Here's your cocoa, Herbert. Careful, don't spill it.
Yeah.
Shaking, Ella. There he goes. Drinking it. Drinking all of it. There.
Did it taste all right?
Yes, now go away.
Well, I've done it. At last I've done it.
I've seen quite enough of you for one day, Ella. Please go to bed.
I drugged your cocoa, Herbert. You'll go to sleep very soon. Then when you're asleep, I do something else.
What are you talking about?
It's a sort of Mickey Finn, only in cocoa instead of liquor. And when you're asleep, you won't feel the needle.
You stop this, Ella.
I got it from one of your books, Herbert. Oh, yes, I do read once in a while. They're horrible, gruesome books, but I know just how to kill you now.
Huh?
I never thought I'd get up the nerve, but I have. I could never have thought of it, though, if it hadn't all been written out for me. Yes, Herbert, it's in all of your books.
Have you suddenly gone off your head?
No. But I'm going to kill you tonight.
Huh?
As soon as the drug puts you to sleep, it'll take about an hour to work. Then you'll fall into a very sound sleep. Then I'm going to kill you.
Oh, you are you?
Yes.
You're very childish, Ella.
I dialed our own number on the other extension, Herbert. Then I left the receiver off. The telephone won't do you any good tonight. You can't get Morris over here now. You might just as well hang up.
I see.
Are you afraid?
No. You haven't the nerve.
Strange, isn't it? You think I'm so timid. I am, really. But tonight I feel so strong. After you're very sound asleep, Herbert, I do just what I do when I give you a hypo. I stick the needle into a vein, and then I just pump. I just pump in air, Herbert, and that's all. You die.
You're serious. You're actually serious.
Yes, Herbert.
I can't believe it. Not dull, mousy little Ella.
Yes. Dull, mousy little Ella.
Of course, you'd be caught.
No.
There'd be an autopsy.
No. You've been sick for 10 years. Lately, your heart's been bad anyway. Dr. Salford won't be surprised. He warned me a year ago when you had your last bad attack that you might be taken. That's what he said. Taken at any time. He won't order an autopsy. He won't even be surprised.
They'll find the mark of the needle.
No. Your arm is covered with needle marks. You've been taking hypos for years. Besides, it's so hairy, like an animal. They'll never notice the needle marks. I've given you so many hypos, Herbert, that I'm quite an expert. I never make your arm bleed. I won't this time.
Well, so the worm has turned, eh? Don't you wish you really had the nerve? You know that you haven't, don't you? You haven't the nerve.
Haven't I?
No.
Can't you see it in my eyes?
What?
Hate. Yes, hate. Oh, Herbert, you've no idea. You'll probably have a big funeral, and I'll be there weeping. I'll watch them close your coffin, and I'll be crying softly. But, oh, Herbert, inside, I'll be laughing. I'll be shouting, he's dead, he's dead. I'll be glad, Herbert, I'll be so glad I won't be able to bear it. Hate! Oh, Herbert, you've no idea. When you were well, you kissed me like a savage. You bruised my arms when you made love. Never once have you been tender. Never once. I've always been afraid of you. Afraid of your temper, your brutality. Afraid of the fights and the rows. The scenes, throwing things. And you know, Herbert, I've never mentioned it. I've never talked about it to friends. Never to anybody. It was pride, I guess. I didn't want them to know that I had married a fiend. Oh, I hate you, Herbert. You think I haven't the nerve for this, that I won't do it? Oh, Herbert.
Ella!
Do you really think that I won't do this, that I won't kill you?
Yes, yes, I believe you will.
If you had left Mary and Frank alone, I might never have... But you're not going to hurt them, Herbert. You're not going to hurt them. They're young and they're in love and they're going to be married. This is the first time I've ever stood up to you, isn't it? You don't know what to make of it, do you? You're beginning to look alarmed. Are you afraid?
You mean it. You really mean it.
Yes.
But it's murder. It's murder, Ella.
Exactly.
Ella Prentice, murderer.
I know, but nobody else will. Dr. Southford will call it death due to a heart condition. Only I will know that it was an air embolism brought on because I pumped you full of air from a hypodermic syringe.
Ella, you can't do this.
Yes, yes, I can, Herbert, and you know it. You know I can.
I haven't always been kind, perhaps.
Kind? Herbert, you've never been kind to me. Never. It's funny to see you frightened. I can see it in your face. How do you like being afraid of me for a change, Herbert? I've always been afraid of you. But I'm not anymore. No, you're afraid of me.
I'm a cripple, Ella. I can't move off this couch.
You're afraid.
Yes, yes, I am. I'm not ready to die, Ella. Think of the Bible, Ella.
What?
Thou shalt not kill, it says. You've gone to church so much, you should know. God will punish you, Ella.
Yes, I know.
Give me another chance, Ella. I'll promise anything, anything.
I can't trust you, Herbert.
Give me the Bible.
Why?
Please hand me the Bible, Ella.
Why do you want?
Ella, please.
No.
Ella, you've got to give me a chance to make it up to you. I know I've been cruel to you, and I'm sorry. Really, I am. Give me another chance, please, Ella. At least you can hand me the Bible. It's on the table beside you. Please.
All right, Herbert.
Thanks. See, Ella? My hands on the Bible. Ella, in the name of Almighty God, and and every sacred word written in this holy book. I swear and I promise that I will never again be cruel to anybody. I swear it. Look, Ella, I'll hold the Bible in both hands and kiss it. I swear in the name of God, in the name of every holy person in this holy book, that I will allow Frank Williams to marry my daughter.
Help him to marry my daughter.
Help him to marry my daughter.
And that I will leave them alone.
And that I will leave them alone. And, dear God in heaven, if I break this sacred oath, may I be struck dead in my bed.
Amen.
Amen. Ella, you've got to believe me.
Not even you could break a promise like that. Yes, Herbert, I believe you.
Then you won't do...
No. No, I won't kill you.
Oh. You won't be sorry, Ella.
I believe you, Herbert. I can't imagine anyone breaking a promise like that.
Trust me, Ella. Please trust me.
Good night, Herbert. You'll sleep for a long time on account of the drug.
I'll see you in the morning, huh?
All right.
Oh, Ella.
Yes?
Would you put the extension receiver back on the hook, please?
All right.
Oh, I think she fell for it. She did. She did. She fell for it. Oh, Ella. Oh, that promise, Guff. She fell for it. So no one could break a promise like that, huh? Ella, my girl, it'll be broken as soon as Morris answers this telephone. He'll come over here and between us we'll put you away for good.
Ella.
I... Oh, my heart. No, I didn't mean it. God, I didn't mean it. Please, no. No.
Hello? Hello?
And if I break this promise, may I be struck dead in my bed.
Just heard The Promise, Attraction 14 on Radio City Playhouse, as written and directed by Harry W. Junkin. Charlotte Holland was heard as Ella Prentice, Joe DeSantis as her husband Herbert. Other players included Sylvia Davis and Eugene Francis. The music was composed and conducted by Dr. Roy Shield. Radio City Playhouse is supervised for the National Broadcasting Company by Richard P. McDonough.
This is Harry Junkin again. Next week on Radio City Playhouse, one of John Galsworthy's finest stories entitled The First and the Last. It is the story of two brothers bound together by blood, but widely separated by inclination. It's an exciting story. We're sure you'll enjoy it, so please be with us. Good night, everybody.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The Radio City Playhouse on Tuned to Yesterday from November 8th, 1948 on NBC. It's an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now one of the best remembered and most popular crime anthology shows on the air during its golden era, It's the Whistler, from April 14th, 1948 on CBS. Gerald Moore stars in the story, Till Death Do Us Part.
The Signal Oil Program, The Whistler. That whistle is your signal for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler.
I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, friends, it's time for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler, rated tops in popularity for a longer period of time than any other West Coast program in radio history. And Signal Gasoline is tops, too. And now The Whistler's strange story. Till death do us part.
Norman Grayson was an art dealer, an enterprising young man who usually wore a friendly smile. Only last night, the sale of 6 original German manuscripts to the wealthy Richard Morris had brought him $50,000, enough to make anyone smile. But now the smile was gone, and Norman Grayson wasn't at all pleased with the way things were going. As he alighted from the cable car and walked along Divisadero Street toward the sumptuous funeral parlors of Carter and Duff, 1,000 confused thoughts raced through Grayson's mind. Thoughts that went back to last night at the Morris home on the Heights, where Morris's young and attractive wife had received him in the study.
I hope you'll forgive me for asking you to come all the way out here at this late hour, Mr. Grayson.
There's nothing to forgive. I was glad to come.
It's only because of Richard. He's ill, you know. His heart.
Yes, so I understand.
Oh, but he'll be up and around very soon. Richard's like that. Bounces right back.
Glad to hear that.
The manuscripts, Mr. Grayson, that's all he's been talking about the past few days. He's determined to add them to his collection. I do hope the price will be right.
$35,000, Mrs. Morris.
$35,000? Mm-hmm. I see. Well, perhaps I shouldn't say this, Mr. Grayson. I don't suppose it's good business.
What's that, Mrs. Norris?
$35,000. It's really a bargain.
Oh, you think so?
I know so. I know manuscripts, too, Mr. Grayson. I've worked with them for some time. The Winston Galleries. I was there for 5 years. That's where I met Richard. You didn't know that?
No, I had no idea, Mrs. Morris.
Sometimes I think that's why Richard asked me to marry him. Just to have someone around to help with his collection. Oh, that must be Dr. Reed. Come in. Oh, come in, Doctor. Oh,
pardon me, Mrs. Morris. I believe I left my overcoat in... Oh, yes. There it is.
How is Richard?
Slight improvement, I'd say, but still a pretty sick chap.
Oh. Doctor, this is Mr. Grayson, Dr. Reed.
Hello, Doctor.
How are you, Mr. Grayson?
Doctor, about Richard, is there anything
No, if he becomes restless later in the evening and can't sleep, you
might... Yes, the prescription. Same dose as usual, I suppose.
That's right. Call me in the morning. Good night, Mrs. Morris.
Good night, Dr. Reed.
Good night, Mr. Grayson.
Night, Doctor.
Oh, he's a dear. Really worries about Richard as much as I do. Well, Mr. Grayson, shall we go on up and have a chat with Richard? Richard. Richard.
Janet?
Yes, darling. Mr. Grayson is here.
Grayson?
The gentleman with the manuscripts. The German manuscripts for your collection.
Oh, yes. Manuscripts.
Yes, Mr. Grayson and I talked it all over. He's going to sell them to you. Darling, aren't you listening to me?
Mrs. Morris, perhaps we'd better not try.
No, it's quite all right, Mr. Grayson. Here, Richard, let me help you sit up.
What for, Janet?
The check. You have to sign it. It's all made out. Everything except the signature, Richard. That's it. That's a good boy. Now, is the pen?
All right.
Oh, that's right. There we are. Ah, that's fine, Richard. Now I'll give the check to Mr. Grayson.
Thank you.
And the manuscripts are all yours. Isn't that wonderful, Richard?
Yes. Janet, a glass of water, please.
Oh, of course, darling. Here's the water. And here's something to make you sleep. Doctor's orders. Now I'll be back in a little to look in on you. Good night, Richard.
You didn't know quite what to make of it, did you, Norman? You were puzzled about Mrs. Morris and the way she rushed the sale. And then the check. That puzzled you even more. Downstairs, as you walked towards the front entrance with Mrs. Morris...
Mrs. Morris, the price I gave you on the manuscript was $35,000, but this check is for...
$50,000. Yes. That was the sum my husband intended to pay. We feel it's no more than right. We still consider it a bargain.
Thank you, Mrs. Morris. Of course, I won't refuse it.
Good. You must drop around to see us soon. Perhaps we can have dinner when Richard's up and around again.
Oh, thanks, Mrs. Morris, but I'm flying to New York at the end of the week, and I...
Oh, dear. I had hoped we could see more of each other. We have so much to talk about.
Well, I'm not leaving until Friday.
Dinner tomorrow night, then?
Sounds wonderful.
We'll have cocktails at 6.
I couldn't think of a better time.
Love to have you, Mr. Grayson. Norman, isn't it?
That's right.
I'm Janet. See you tomorrow evening, then.
Tomorrow evening it is, Janet.
When you left the Morris home, you weren't at all quite certain that business in New York was important enough to drag you away by Friday. You could put that off for a while yet, as long as there was someone as attractive and as interesting as Janet Morris in San Francisco. No, business in New York could wait. Early the next morning, you cashed the $50,000 check, then spent the rest of the day roaming around town. Later that afternoon, when you returned to your hotel...
Oh, Mr. Grayson, someone's been calling you all afternoon. Wouldn't leave a message.
No?
A young lady.
No message, huh?
No, sir. Here's your keys.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, by the way, Mr. Grayson, you've seen the papers, I suppose.
Hmm? Papers?
Yes, the gentleman you were asking me about several weeks ago, Mr. Morris.
Morris? What about him?
Well, you didn't know. He died this morning. Heart attack.
Yes, it was all there in the evening paper. Richard J. Morris, prominent Bay Area businessman, art collector, dead. You hurried up to your room and began to pack, and then the phone rang.
Hello?
Norman, this is Janet. Janet Morris.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I just read the papers. I'm terribly sorry, Janet. Is there anything I can do?
As a matter of fact, there is. Yes, I'd like to see you, Norman. There are a few things we should discuss about the manuscripts.
Oh? What is there to talk about, Janet?
Don't you know?
All right. I'll come right up.
No, not here at the house. That wouldn't be right. Suppose you meet me in, say, 2 hours from now. I'll be at the funeral parlor making arrangements for Richard. It's on Divisadero.
I know.
You'll be there, won't you?
Yes. I'll be there.
Good. I wouldn't want you to do anything foolish, like leaving town in a hurry.
With the prologue of Till Death Do Us Part, the Signal Oil Company is bringing you another strange story by The Whistler. But now, friends, a special announcement. The first announcement on what we honestly believe is today's greatest tire value, barring none. You can now buy a nationally advertised Lee Deluxe 4-ply tire with a 1-year written guarantee against road hazards for only $12.95 plus tax at Signal dealers from Canada to Mexico. And now back to the Whistler.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it had been a profitable business deal, hadn't it, Norman? Selling the 6 original German manuscripts to Richard Morris. But less than 18 hours after he signed a check to you for $50,000, Richard Morris is dead of a heart attack. And now his widow, the young, attractive Janet Morris, summoned you to see her, and of all places, at a funeral home. When you reach the funeral home, a slender, solemn-faced young man leads you down a long, thickly carpeted corridor toward the rear of the building into a private waiting room. The door closes softly behind you, and you're alone with Janet.
Norman.
I'm sorry, Janet.
Oh, it's so awful. I just can't believe it. Poor Richard. And to think I let you swindle him out of $50,000.
Look, Janet,
Please, don't bother to deny it. The manuscripts are forgeries. I know.
You knew it all the time.
Yes.
Did he?
Of course not. At first he wanted me to take him to Mansfield for appraisal.
Mansfield? Fred Mansfield?
Yes, but I talked Richard out of it. He had a lot of respect for my judgment.
I see.
So no one knows about this but us and the man responsible for the manuscripts. They're quite good. Ziegler's work, isn't it? I understand he's back in this country. I told you yesterday I knew manuscripts. Had to be Ziegler or Klein. By the way, where is Klein these days?
In a Berlin cemetery. He made a mistake. A bad one.
Oh, he was such an artist. Oh, I wish they'd stop that music. I don't like it.
Janet.
Yes?
What are we going to do about the manuscripts?
Well, I could turn the whole matter over to the police, but it would be such a bother. And, well, after what's happened, I just want to get away somewhere.
So?
So I think I'll give you the manuscripts. That is, I'll sell them back to you, Norman.
For $50,000?
Yes.
You wouldn't consider the original price, $35,000.
Oh, no, Richard wouldn't like that. I'm afraid I'll have to insist on $50,000. Are you in the market, Norman?
I'll have to think it over.
Well, all right.
Janet.
Yes?
You know, I can't figure you out.
Oh.
I mean about the money. Morris must have left you a fortune. Why should you worry about 50 grand?
50,000 is very important. You see, there's a catch to the fortune. It's tied up in trust. I'm to get only 800 a month.
Oh, that's awfully tough, isn't it?
It is, when one is used to the things I am. Richard planned it that way. My own good, you know. Wasn't that thoughtful of him?
Yeah. So when I came along, you saw your chance to grab off a little pin money, huh? Money that he'd never know you had. That's why you upped the ante from 35 to 50 grand on that check.
Yes. Wasn't that thoughtful of me?
You knew it was coming back to baby. Smart. Very smart.
Norman, people will be arriving soon. I'm afraid I can't talk to you anymore. I'll give you till tomorrow night to think it over.
That's nice of you.
8 o'clock. The house. And Norman...
Yeah?
Don't forget to bring the money.
I'll tie a string around my finger.
Norman, come in, come in. Sorry I took so long. I was taking a nap. The servants are all gone. They're at the funeral parlor.
Touching, very touching.
Why don't you go into the study? I want to freshen up a bit. Fix yourself a drink.
Thanks. Popular prices, of course.
Oh, Norman, you're bitter.
Let's just say I got up on the wrong side of the world this morning.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Okay. Okay, I'm sold. I better go in and fix a drink before the prices change.
I won't be more than 10 minutes, Norman. Make yourself at home.
You stand in the hallway, listening to Janet's footsteps overhead. Then a door closes. Silently, you slip up the stairs, past Janet's room to the far end of the corridor. If only you can get your hands on the manuscripts. A moment later, you step into Richard's room, quickly cross to the desk by the window and begin your search. Minutes pass. Frantically, you continue to look for the manuscripts. Glance at your watch. Janet will be going back downstairs any minute. You need time, Norman, more time. The manuscripts are in the house somewhere. And then... your eyes fall on the nightstand next to the empty bed. The nightstand. And the half-dozen bottles of medicine. You pick up the small blue bottle. You remember this one, don't you? Sleeping tablets. You stick them in your pocket. In less than a minute, you're back in the study downstairs.
My, aren't you cheerful?
Why not? I may even go into a soft shoe routine. Want to see it?
Later, perhaps. Oh, you fixed me a drink. How nice.
Here you are, sweetheart.
Thank you. To us, Norman.
Yeah, to us. You know, Janet, it's a funny thing about Ziegler. Seems to pop up in the most unexpected places. I remember the last time I saw him. London. It was right after the Marcus affair. You remember it, don't you, Janet? Janet.
What? What did you say, Norman?
The Marcus affair. The paintings.
Oh, yes. Yes, I seem to remember.
What's the matter, sweetheart? Don't you feel well?
No. I feel fine. Just sleepy, I guess. I suppose it's stuffy in here.
Oh. What you need is another drink, huh? Janet.
Oh, no. I don't think so. What were you saying about...
Ziegler? Oh, yes. Right after the war.
It won't be long now, will it, Norman? Your voice drones on and on. Janet can hardly keep her eyes open. And then finally she drops off to sleep. You keep talking. Then you get to your feet and walk over to her.
Janet? Janet?
Janet?
Oh. Fallen asleep, have you, darling? Don't worry. You haven't got enough to keep you asleep. Too long. Just long enough for me to finish here. Oh, by the way, I hadn't finished telling you how I got the manuscripts, how Klein stole them from Ziegler, and how I had to kill Klein to get them back. Yes, it was a bad mistake on Klein's part.
You haven't much time now, Norman. The servants may be coming home at any moment. Quickly, you begin a systematic search of the study, and you're in luck. In less than 5 minutes, the manuscripts are tucked away in your inside coat pocket. You leave Janet sleeping peacefully in the chair and slip out the front door. As you stroll down the walk, you toss the bottle of sleeping tablets into the bushes. Then when you reach the gate, you turn and look back at the house.
Ha ha! So long, sweetheart. Sleep tight.
You're quite pleased with the way things have turned out, aren't you, Norman? The money you received from Richard Morris is tucked away in a San Francisco bank. The manuscripts are in the mail for New York. And in a matter of hours now, you'll be on the plane heading east. And you're not too worried about Janet, what she'll do. You've just outsmarted her, that's all. She won't do a thing. She'll take her beating like a good little girl, perhaps look around for another sucker. Then an hour before your plane time, you're about to leave the hotel when there's a knock on the door.
Yes?
Lieutenant Benson, San Francisco Police. You're Grayson?
Yes. Yes, what is...
Can I come in? Thanks. Leaving town, Mr. Grayson?
Yes.
You had some sort of a business deal with a gentleman named Richard Morris a couple of days ago, didn't you?
Did I?
An art dealer named Mansfield dropped over to have a little chat with us yesterday. Seems Morris had asked him to check on some German manuscripts you had for sale.
So?
The manuscripts were forgeries, according to Mansfield. And when Morris died, sort of suddenly, well, Mansfield thought he should bring it to our attention.
I don't know what you're talking about, Lieutenant.
You were at the Morris home last night, weren't you?
Okay. I just dropped in to say goodbye, that's all.
You were there the night before Morris died, weren't you? The night you poisoned him because he was going to turn you in for fraud.
Poisoned him? Wait a minute.
Yeah, he was poisoned. Looked just like a heart attack.
Now, listen, I didn't poison him. Janet, she must have.
Mm-hmm.
Why, of course, that's it. She had everything to gain, don't you see? Money
so
and...
she did it, huh? Then last night, she turns right around and takes some of the stuff herself.
What?
Yeah, the sleeping tablets. It turned out to be poison. She's dead, Grayson. We found the half-empty bottle hidden in some bushes in front of the house. Has some fingerprints on it. Be very interesting to see how they stack up with yours. Hmm?
Let that whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, each Wednesday night at this same time. Brought to you by the Signal Oil Company, marketers of Signal gasoline and motor oil, and fine quality automotive accessories. Featured in tonight's story were Doris Singleton and Gerald Moore. The Whistler was produced by George W. Allen, with story by John W. Hart, and music by Wilbur Hatch. This is Marvin Miller speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Whistler, on Tuned to Yesterday from April 14th, 1948 on CBS. And that brings to a close the cases in this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's Yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for tuning in.